Welcome to Christ Church Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com. My home is not on this
earth, not in this world. We're going to talk about Give Big this evening, and we're just going to think about it in a slightly different way. And let's begin that. So, and we'll begin that by me talking about the fact that I've been married now for 19 years. Woo! Yeah, that's right. Congratulate me, commiserate with Vicky afterwards. But on our wedding day, my identity changed. Didn't become Batman or anything like that, disappointingly. But my identity changed, and I became a husband. And Vicky could say to me, Tim, you are now my husband. Now, being a husband includes all sorts of responsibilities and roles and tasks and ways of behaving. And I would say at the beginning, I was rubbish at almost all of those things. Maybe all of them, but definitely the significant majority of those things. I was absolute rubbish at them, and hopefully I got better over the years. You can ask Vicky about that later. But regardless of how rubbish I was at the roles and responsibilities of being a husband, I still was a husband. That was still my identity. I still retained that. And actually, understanding our identity is a very important thing, and Jesus had a lot to say about who we are. And what he says actually is a hugely important part of our faith. He had a very clear idea of who we are meant to be. And now as Christians, sometimes we get quite easily caught up in the behavior. We think, okay, well, if I behave in all of these sorts of ways, then I become a proper Christian. If I do this and I do that, then I'll be fine and I'll get in. But actually, although Jesus did have a lot to say about the way we behaved, what he was primarily concerned with was us understanding our identity. Understanding who we are. And Jesus, through our identity, saw that the world could actually be renewed. The world could be restored. And when Jesus taught us to pray, he said, pray, let's ask God that it would be on earth like it is in heaven. And one of the ways that he works that out is through you knowing who you are. And actually, I think Jesus gives us identity. He doesn't set us tasks, okay? Who you are is more important than what you do. Now, when you understand who you are, then you begin to act up to that, right? When you know who you are, you think, actually, you know what? I need to live that out more and more. So today, we're going to read from Matthew 5, and we're going to read a whole bunch of the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount that that Jesus taught and that Matthew records. And we're going to read a few verses. It will appear behind me, or you can follow along in your Bibles. And then we're going to see what Jesus had to say about our identity. Let's begin. It's Matthew 5, verse 1. It says, seeing the crowds, this is Jesus, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth, and he taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you, falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, your light before others shine, your light shines before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. So in this passage, Jesus has he's giving us a clear clue about good attitudes, good behaviors, to have and that he is looking for. That's the Beatitudes. That's what he's looking for. And even how those behaviors, how those attitudes, he blesses them. He kind of powers them. That's how he describes it. But he sets it all in the context of who we are, of our identity. So the Beatitudes, they're big statements about you behave in this way, it is blessed. You think in this way, it's blessed. You live in this way, it's blessed. But underneath it all, it's almost like he's asking a question, because they're such big statements about how we should behave. They're so out there, they're so audacious, there's a question underneath. When Jesus is saying, well, who are you really? Who do you think you are? What do you think you are made for in this world? What is your role in the world? What do you think you're going to, what role you're going to play should be? What is your identity? And then he gives us a huge vision for who we are meant to be, for our identity, for our presence and our future. And he does that in verse 13 and 14 when he says, you are. So Jesus is beginning his new kingdom, his new way of doing things. He is restoring the relationship between God and his people, which has been fractured and broken. He is restoring this people of God to their rightful place in creation. He's also restoring all of creation. And that is happening as we read this. It's happening right now, today. And how do we know it's happening? Because he looks at us, he looks at you, and he says, you are. So let's think about that today. We're going to dig into that a bit, understanding what Jesus says, what he thinks about our identity. And when he says you are, he's actually catapulting us right into the middle of his plan. Okay, his great scheme for restoring the world. He is putting us right into the middle. We are not audience members, as Jesus does all the stuff on stage and we just kind of watch and observe. Actually, Jesus brings us up onto the stage and makes us part of this great drama he's involved in. So Matthew 5, he says, you are the salt of the earth, you are the light of the world. Now, there are three quick things we need to understand about this, about these two statements. Firstly, it is urgent and present. So when he says you are, he's saying you have purpose that affects the world. So salt, you put it on your dinner, it changes it instantly. And if you turn a light on the room, it changes the room instantly. So it's urgent and present. So Jesus isn't saying this to flatter his audience, to try and win points with people. He's saying, look, urgently and presently, you need to understand your place in the world. Secondly, he's also saying, look, this requires a level of commitment on your behalf. So he says, look, you have to retain your saltiness and you have to not hide the light. And thirdly, it's future focused. Okay, so he knows that when you live this way, when you live with this attitude, if you look to understand your identity and grow into that and live into that, actually the world changes around you. So let's look at this idea of being the salt of the earth. So salt has been used for thousands of years for hundreds of different tasks, whether that is to flavor your chips or to melt the ice on the driveway, whatever it might be, there are lots of different uses for it. And in Jesus' time, the main use for salt was to preserve food. So obviously they had no fridges or freezers and they lived in a particularly hot part of the world. So how did they preserve their food? They would rub salt into it, particularly meat. You could make meat last a very long time if you rubbed salt in it. It would keep it good for longer. And so Jesus was reminding his people that part of their purpose, part of their identity actually was to preserve. Okay, so Israel's role, and remember, as Jesus was preaching, he was preaching in the countryside of Israel, so the people of God were stood around him, listening to him, and he was telling them that your role in the world is to represent God to humanity, and then humanity to God. You are mediators between the two. So somehow, as you do that, you preserve the earth, and you keep it good, because you help there to be a relationship between the two. And actually, the people, as they were listening, they would have kind of understood this. They would have known their Old Testament, or actually it would have just been the Testament then. It was not the Old or the New. They would have known their scriptures. They would have known what Jesus was talking about. Perhaps they would even have thought of a passage in Leviticus where it says, actually, you shall season all your grain offerings with salt. You shall not let the salt of the covenant with your God be missing from your grain offerings. With all your offerings, you shall offer salt. Okay? So salt, this sounds a bit odd. Go with me on this. Salt, it was a very important part of how they sacrificed stuff in the temple. Okay? It was a really important part of how they worshipped to God. They would put salt on their offerings. And when Jesus was saying this, you're the salt of the earth, he was hinting at a way the world could be preserved. Because all the things that they did would be offered to sacrifice as God. So you would season everything with salt. So your life as you live it out as an offering of worship, as an offering of sacrifice, is seasoned with salt. And Jesus takes this image and kind of expands it out. And he wasn't saying, look, every time you do something, you need to chuck salt on it. Okay, he wasn't talking about the physical putting salt on things. Actually, he was saying, look, you are now the salt. There doesn't need to be burnt offerings or anything like that anymore because Jesus was going to become the final offering. But actually, we put salt on things in the way that we behave because we are the salt. We are the salt that changes, the salt that actually preserves, the salt that actually makes the world better. So as we live lives of worship, of sacrifice, we are being salt. So in your lectures at university, there's someone in your lecture who nobody else will sit next to because they're a bit difficult, okay? And you realize actually they're lonely. So you go and sit with them and you just try and be their friends. And in that moment, there's a little bit of salt there. That's sacrifice. That's an offering of worship. When you work really hard on your course, you might not think about it in these terms. When you work really hard to get things done in a way that isn't stressful, actually, there's a little bit of salt there. Perhaps when you work hard to help someone who's struggling, there's a moment of salt there. Our job as the people of God is to change and preserve the earth. And actually, we can rub salt into the world around us. We can stop the decline. We can stop the decay in our society because we are the salt as we go into the world. We can do things that preserve what is good. So how do we do that? Okay, it's quite an abstract picture that Jesus has painted for us. Well, remember, he went through all of those beatitudes. Okay, all of those behaviours and heart attitudes that he said, this is a blessed way to behave. So when we go into the world and we are meek, so meek maybe to put others above ourselves, to not look after our own needs, but actually we're going to put other people first. Actually, when we live with that way, then we are being salty. Perhaps if we hunger after righteousness and justice, when we are merciful, when actually we look to be pure in hearts, and when we make peace, all of those things are an opportunity to be salt, to be the salt of the earth. That's how we preserve the earth, how we stop the spread of decay. And Jesus encourages us, actually, we are to be engaged in the world. And we talked about this last week, to be an engaged church. But actually, as we do that, we can produce goodness. We can produce good things in the world. So when we decide to show mercy to someone who upsets us, like somebody says something, somebody is mean or somebody is hard-hearted at us, and it upsets us. But in that moment, we have an opportunity to show mercy or retaliate and sulk. So when we choose, actually, you know what? I'm going to be merciful. I'm going to forgive them. In that moment, there's a bit of salt there. Or perhaps we decide to make peace with someone we know is gossiping about us. And you think, they're gossiping about me. I've actually got some pretty good dirt on them. I could totally get them back. But actually, when we decide to go for peace instead, to try and restore relationship instead, actually, there's a little bit of salt there. Or perhaps there's a time when we choose to be pure over a short-term pleasure. In that moment, there is some salt. When we seek justice for someone who cannot defend themselves, there is some salt there. And actually, one of the good things about when we give to the poor, we do this once a year at this Give Big, like Gabby talked about. Actually, that's a fantastic opportunity to be salt, to actually stand up for people who have very little in the way of voice. So when we give to Oasis and Barnabas, we are standing up for justice in a small way for people in our city. We're looking to provide for them. We're looking for them to have some peace as well. Actually, for the churches in the east of Ukraine, they are standing up against some crazy injustice. The injustice perpetrated by the Russian army, levels of injustice. I met one of the leaders of the east of Ukraine, one of their churches, just last year when I was in Kiev. And he bounces up to me because he knew who I was. Not because I'm anyone special, but he knew that I came from this church and that we had sent money to them in the past to kind of help them and look after them. And he's a pastor there in the East. He comes up, gives me a big hug. Then he starts crying. Obviously, I hate public displays of affection, so I didn't cry. I didn't cry at all. But he was just so pleased to see me. And then we got talking and he explained, look, I can stay where I am, I can stay behind the conflict line, I can stay in an area that has been invaded by the Russians, and I can lead my church, I can look after the poor, my family can be provided for because you are sending us money. And numbers of pastors were experiencing that because of what CCM has done. And in that moment, actually, we've been a bit salty there. We're standing up for justice, for people who actually have very little voice in the world. So it's really simple. As we live our lives, as we look to worship, as we look to offer sacrifice in how we live, we get to be salt. And I think a city like Manchester, perhaps a university where you might be studying, perhaps your workplace that you go to every day, maybe even your friendship group or perhaps your family. If there are Christians in those places, people who believe in Jesus, who understand that they are something, that they are salt, that that's how they are to live out their lives, to live in that identity, then actually I think we go about preserving the world. We go about bringing goods in what's around us. I think the world will be prevented from decaying. So when we have this opportunity with Give Big, actually our money, our finances are a great way to be salty. A great way to preserve when we generously give to the poor. And finance isn't the only way, but it is a fantastic opportunity. As we look to stand with Oasis, with Barnabas, with those churches in the east of Ukraine. And it's very important to remember this because actually we can quite quickly forget. Now, I'm a little bit of a news hound. I love to watch Channel 4 News, 7 o'clock every weekday. That's where I get my news fix from, and everybody has to shut up and leave the room if they're not going to be quiet. I want to watch the news, okay? This is how it is. But sometimes you watch it, and you find it kind of wearing you down a little bit. You think, God, this news seems to get worse every day, which I'm sure it's not, but you keep watching it and actually realizing it's taken away a bit of your hope, helping you to think, actually, you know what? There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do to change this. But actually, Jesus says, well, there is, by you living how you are supposed to, by you understanding who you are meant to be, you actually do get to participate in the world around you. Perhaps even it's the busyness of our own lives, thinking, oh, I've just got so much to do. I've got one thing after another. How can I possibly fit in any more? Tim, you can't give me any more jobs here. And actually, I don't want to, and Jesus didn't want to. He was just saying, you need to know who you are. The way we interact with the world around us is an opportunity for us to be salt and to be light. Jesus looked around at all the people who were stood with him, and he didn't say, you go do saltiness. He said, you are salt. But there's an encouragement in this, but there's also warning as well. And he goes and says, look, if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and walked on. It's trampled under people's feet. Actually, Jesus is encouraging us, look, you are this. But there's a warning here as well. There's a warning against forgetting who we are, forgetting our identity and compromise. And how can salt lose its saltiness? How is that possible? What's Jesus saying? Well, in those days, people who would sell salt would mix it with sand and dirt so that they could sell more and make more money. And so that was their kind of way. They cut the salt, which is not very good. So if you get salt, which is full of dirt and sand, then you can't really rub it into the meat. It wouldn't preserve it. It would just make it filthy. It's not a good thing. So they would just have to throw it away. The meat would go off. What Jesus is saying is actually there is a high call here to retain your saltiness, to not compromise, to not allow yourself to be contaminated with the things of the world around you, but actually to retain your saltiness. And remember, he was stood in front of all these people from Israel, these Jewish believers, and he was saying to them, look, your job is to preserve the world. You've become contaminated. And he says, you have rejected the warnings of the prophets. You've worshipped idols. You've turned your back on God. You've been fled into exile. And as he stood before him, he's saying, you are a nation actually that has lost your saltiness. You are not living as God wanted you. You have lost your sense of purpose. And that's a high call for us today as well. To think, gosh, God wants us to preserve the world, to live that out, to make it good by having believers in Jesus realize who they are. We are the means that God wants to use. Actually, Jesus is very clear on this. You have a role to play in knowing who you are. But you can lose your saltiness. You can become contaminated. You can compromise. You can give up on justice. You can decide to be silent and not say anything. You can give up on righteousness by deciding not to follow the way of Jesus, but just to live your own way. You can give up on purity and lose your saltiness. You can give up on mercy and decide that division is fine. You lose your saltiness. Jesus says, you are the salt of the earth. It is a high call. And then he goes on to say, but you are also the light of the world, a city set on a hill that can't be hidden. So years ago, Vicky and I were visiting some friends in Italy, and they lived in a city called Perugia. And our friend Sophie, who we're staying with, saying, look, I want to take you to Assisi. Okay, and Assisi is a town. You must have heard of St. Francis of Assisi, right? Yes, a few of you had. Well done. And he's irrelevant to the story. But he had a town. He came from a town, which is why he's called of Assisi. So he came from this place called Assisi. And so she said, oh, we'll drive you there. It was a fair drive. And so we drove down from Perugia, which was in the mountains, and then drove down and onto a big plain, a huge plain. And in the middle of this plain was a hill, and it had this town on it, Assisi. And wherever you were on that plain, you could see this town because there were no other hills. And in fact, even if you weren't looking at it, you kind of knew where it was because it was so imposing. It was a strange place. You could see it from wherever you were. And when Jesus says, look, you are light and you're like a city, he's saying these are things that are both very, very visible, very easy to see. Okay, so light, obviously, if we turned off all the lights in this room now, it'd get very dark. If we turn them back on again, it would obviously get light and the darkness would leave. But not only that, we'd be able to see lots of things in the room. It's about visibility, isn't it? And a city on a hill actually is a very visible way of life. So at night time, you could see that city, all the lights would come on. You would see life and activity there. You would know that. There are hills out on the sides of Manchester. You can look out at night and you can see all of the lights. You can see all the red lights on top of the cranes. You can see a city that's expanding and growing. And actually, you get that sense from looking at it. But cities have a reputation as well. So when you go towards a city, you might be thinking, actually, there's art and culture there. I'm going to have a good time in that city. It's a fun place to go. Or you might be going towards the city thinking, I can get a job here. I can get employment. I can make a living for myself. Cities have reputation. So Jesus is saying, look, you are to be known. You will have reputation. And you are to be visible as well. You are a city on a hill. You are a light. And he says, look, do people light a lamp and put it under a basket? No, they put it on a stand. That's what they do. And it gives light to the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father. We are to be visible. We are to be known. It's a funny thing, isn't it? Say, you are to be known. Actually, all of you here, people should have heard of you. And why is that? It's actually because you know who you are. You understand what your identity is. And because of that, actually, you do good things. You live out those beatitudes. You'll be like a light on a stand. You bring light to the whole house because of who God has made you to be. And there is a call in this to understand our identity. And it's not the words that we say. It's not even the things that we choose to do or the things that we refuse to do. And sometimes us Christians are known for the things we won't do, aren't we? It's not about that. It's about who God has made you to be. So when we think about give big, when we think about our finances, sometimes it's easy to think, oh, I should do this. This is what I should probably do. My money's a bit chaotic, but I'm going to try and do this because it's probably the right thing. Actually, what we should think is, you know what, I'm salt and light. So how do I use my money to preserve? How do I use my money to bring light into the room? How do I use my money to rub salt in, to make this place better? So Vic Armstrong, who runs the Oasis Centre, actually set up the Oasis Centre. If you don't know her, she is a little bit like a light in the room. Actually, if you were at any social gathering and she's in it, she's kind of a light in the room. She's a wonderful person. But Oasis itself in Gorton actually is a light in that place. It is. It's a light. It's not hidden. It's very visible. It's well known. And we get to help them. We get to fund them a little bit. Barnabas is the same. If we go to our city centre, we will see the homeless problem. We moved to Manchester about 10 years ago, and then official figures were that there was maybe 9 or 10 homeless people in Manchester. And actually now it's hundreds. It's changed so much in the last 10 years. And Barnabas do a great job through all sorts of different means to help people find accommodation, to help them develop some sort of permanent routine in life, not just to fight fires with them. But when they do that, they are trying to prevent the decay, aren't they? They're trying to rub salt into that to try and preserve. Our friends who are leading churches in the east of Ukraine, and some of you may never meet these people, but they think of you as their friends because we have loved them and we have stood with them. But in those times, we are helping them to build a city on a hill. I've met a few of these guys, and one of them, effectively, because the economy collapsed where they were, because actually those who are fit and healthy fled, that he was left in the town with those who were poor and vulnerable, and he wasn't just the church leader, he became the mayor of the town just by default because no one else would do it. And he was telling me, yeah, we fix people's roofs, we fix the roads in this town, I lead this church, our church building is full of washing machines because it's the only place with washing machines. And you think, oh man, that is not in my job description as a church leader, I don't know how you do it. But he is building a city on a hill, that is a very visible thing. So when we give, actually whatever we choose to do, we need to think of it from a you are point of view. Think, not what should I do at the moment? What's the right thing to do? Because Jesus said, actually, no, you think about who you are. You are salt, so you can preserve. And when we think about all the different things we do, we think, actually, what do I need to do that preserves, that rubs in salt, that really is about who I'm meant to be? Or to think, actually, you know what? I am light. I'm light that brings visibility and drives away darkness from a place. Again, these aren't the things I have to do. Actually, this is understanding fundamentally who I am.